All right. Is that everybody back from breakout rooms then?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm just greeting folks, and then we will get started. I will start with the people on Zoom, and I'll greet Mick. And you can leave it on gallery now because they're not going to say anything. Jinryu, Tyler, Bob, Lori, Mark, Marv, Karen, Grant, Gaffel, Alice, Betty, Joshua, Paul, Sabrina, Simone, and Ruth Ann, and in the Zendo,
Dave,
Susan,
Dennis,
Walt, Franklin, Coral, Carson, Vegas,
Erica,
Judith,
Ted,
and Domino. So as you can see, we're coming out of our COVID shells for the time being. We'll fingers crossed that it'll last. Announcements. Oh yeah. Not this Sunday, a week from Sunday will be our annual Vaisak ceremony, which is the festival of the Buddha's birth. So we'll have a bower set up with the little baby Buddha and flowers and sweet tea to pour over the baby Buddha's head. And it's a very sweet ceremony. So that's on a Sunday, April 10th,
yes.
I believe. And it's in place of our chanting service. So it'll happen before Zazen, and then there will still be a Dharma talk that day. We have needs for volunteers for various things, local and non-local. So if you want to do some Sangha service, let me know and I will try to connect you. Let's see, I think that's about it. And any other things I should announce people can think of, or questions about what I said? All right, then I will turn it over to Bob.
Well, thank you, Domio. Just do an audio check here. Mick says I'm fine. Am I too loud? Is it distorting? No? Okay, very good. Well, tonight I'm taking a stab at the, taking an attempt at the precept of do not kill. And as we did this, yes? Somebody said something. It's okay. All right. So out of the Right Way Zen chat book on page 30 says, Kyoju Kaimon says, do not kill, cultivate and encourage life. In the realm of the everlasting Dharma, holding no thought of killing is the precept of not killing. The life of Buddha increases with life. No life can be cut off. Continue the life of Buddha. Do not kill Buddha. This is a very mysterious, to me at least, a mysterious kind of a precept. Now, growing up in a Judeo-Christian country and family, do not kill is one of the Ten Commandments. And So I was very interested to see what this had to say. And they take it a different way. This is the first grave precept. Now, that's not to say they take it a different way. In Judeo-Christian, do not kill. It's a absolute commandment. It's a directive. And if you violate the directives, there's punishments, and that sort of thing doesn't occur in Buddhism, that I'm aware of at least. Now we can talk about that later. This structure that was brought to my attention in my investigation of this is that the first line, do not kill, cultivate and encourage life, is a very specific first thing. It's the first line of the precept. But the next two lines are a couplet. One is from the, absolute, and the other one is from the relative. Now, the way this was explained to me, my presumption was that the first was the absolute, in the realm of the everlasting Dharma, holding no thought of killing is the precept of not killing. And the second one, coming from the relative side, the life of Buddha increases with life. No life can be cut off. Continue the life of Buddha. Do not kill Buddha. So I had to investigate to determine what does it mean to be absolute and or relative. So let me bring up, let's see, got to see which one I've got here. Yeah, okay. Sorry, I'm trying to work with my slides here. Hang on just a moment. So I'm endeavoring to bring you slides to show you the relative and absolute chart that Domio presented for us. I think it's on the website. I'm pretty sure it's on the website. And there we go. All right. So, I'm going to share a screen. And there we go. So here we have the two aspects or sides of reality from this perspective. And I wasn't able to find or identify she or Li. And we have the two sides, relative or absolute. So I will say there's a lot here to look at, and I won't go through all of this, but the whole point is that this relates to the presentation that Dogen, who put together our precepts with the commentary, presented in the Kyoju Kaimon. So I will close that down. And go back to my notes here. I need a bigger computer. Gonna have to work on that, huh? I don't have enough screen space. Okay, my laptop here is not a desktop replacement at all. So, to review, do not kill, cultivate, and encourage life. We have the absolute realm, the everlasting Dharma. Holding no thought of killing is the precept of not killing. Relative, in other words, our level or our plane of existence, the life of Buddha increases with life. No life can be cut off. Continue the life of Buddha. Do not kill Buddha. Okay, so that's fair enough, but now I'm confused. And I'm telling you this from my standpoint because I'm still wrestling with this whole precept in terms of what does it mean? What is the actual understanding to extract from this precept, the way Dogen brought it to us? Now remember, we're talking about somebody who was writing back, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought Dogen was back in the 1200s. Is that correct? Maybe yes. I can't see anybody at this point. So my big question tonight is, what does Buddha mean here? What does Buddha mean? We're not talking about the actual Siddhartha Gautama, who became the Buddha or the awakened one. So if we're not talking about that, then the life of Buddha increases with life? Is it all of Buddhism that increases with life? And good point that was brought up earlier, no life can be cut off. What can be cut off if there is no no life can be cut off? How does that work? I'm still confused. But then I went back and I thought, well, okay, what are we talking about when we talk about precepts? Well, precept confused me because I wasn't sure what that actually meant because I hadn't run across it before I ran into Buddhism. And from Wikipedia, I extract the notion that in religion, in this case Christianity, it's a commanding moral conduct. And in fact, in the Psalms, they even talk about thou hast commanded thy precepts to be kept diligently. Oh, that my ways may be steadfast in keeping thy statutes. So they equate it to a statute, a rule, a law. And that's out of the Revised Standard Version, by the way. Catholicism takes it even further, making it canon law. And I'm not really sure what canon means, actually, because I've heard people talk about something being canon and not canon. And I've got to look that up, too. Isn't it amazing how you take on a study of one thing and it opens up a whole field of exploration in any number of different directions. So getting back to Buddhism, they talk about it being related to precepts being related to Buddhist ethics. And according to this Wikipedia article, the fundamental Buddhist code of ethics is known as the five precepts. Now, there are more or less precepts, I guess not more, not less, but rather more precepts for the various traditions. Theravadan is 8 precepts, 10 precepts, tons of different things. And I think Domio mentioned years ago about the monastic rules, and I discovered this one, the Theravada Code of Monastic Discipline, which consists of 227 rules for monks and 311 rules for nuns. I'll have to take a look and see how why there's more for women than there are for men, but I'm not going to get into that tonight. And I ran across, there's also precepts in secular law and also in higher education, amazingly enough. Princeton University uses the term precept to describe what other universities refer to as recitations. Large classes are often divided into several smaller discussion sections called precepts. So if we start talking about our precept rooms, we're not going to be very happy in our lineage here. So anyway, those are all investigations that I've been dealing with, and what precepts bring up as far as, is it a rule? Is it a law? Can you break a precept? And what happens if you break a precept? Are you excommunicated from Buddhism? No, you're not. You do your best. You do your best. And you have to think about what you're doing. And that's a lot of what Buddhism, especially the precepts, is pointing at. Think about what you're doing. You know, do you need to absolutely kill everything that irritates you? The mouse, the squirrel. Side comment, talk about a squirrel. So a number of years ago, one afternoon or evening, heard this terrible screeching sound coming from inside the wall. Couldn't figure out what it was. Well, it turns out the wall surrounded the metal fireplace that we have in this house, and a squirrel had gotten down in between the metal tubing that comprised the chimney itself inside, and then two layers of steel tubing that went up into the attic and then up into the area around the flue. It's a wooden cased chimney-like affair. It's not ceramic or brick. But they had gotten, the squirrel had gotten down in between looking for warmth because it was pretty cold. But apparently lost grip because there was nothing to grip on the inside of those metal tubes and ended up in the box at the bottom surrounding our fireplace. And it was just going nuts. It couldn't get out. So instead of poisoning the critter or gassing it or whatever, I cut a hole and got a live animal trap and pushed the trap up against there with some peanut butter on a plate in there. And I trapped it and I released it back out into the outside side yard where it scampered away. And I'm not sure what happened after that, but that's not, you know, that's what I was talking about by not killing. I didn't have to kill the critter, didn't have to kill the squirrel. So that was, you know, one meaning for me of, you know, doing that. Now, it was important for me to do that. I'm looking through a lot of my notes, and I'm thinking that maybe I'm getting off track with what I want to go into. One commenter that I discussed this with pointed out that one aspect of this precept is not cutting off connection between things and pointing to a deep acceptance of the things that as they are, which points us also to a deeper understanding of the interconnection of all that we have around us, and that we arise and fall from the same essential nature, that we all are in the same boat together. And I've always felt that that was true, and I always felt quite ambivalent about going fishing, going hunting. It was like, yeah, okay, I get the point, but we don't really need to catch fish for dinner, Dad. We just don't. We could go to the store and get all the fish we want, but he wanted to go fishing and catch trout and salmon, and that was fine. It was sport, and we never wasted anything. But I never went deer hunting and shot anything. I went deer hunting once, frankly, and it was like, okay, I'm out here. You know, it was great being outdoors, but I didn't need any deer meat. I didn't need any deer horns. So killing a deer was not very much fun. Didn't want to be a part of it, frankly. But I had to be more strong than that, and I learned later to do that. So there's a ton of different things to look at with this precept. I've been struggling actually this last couple of weeks, actually last month or so, with the problems that we're having in the world today. The bigger function of the world. We're dealing with something that I frankly thought I would never have to see again, never have to see, period. I did not live through World War II. That was my dad's war. He was not a professional soldier, but he was in a very responsible position in the Army. And I ended up in the Air Force during the Cold War. And it was part of my upbringing in Seattle that I was given dog tags because we could be whisked away to the Black Diamond coal mine, where we would be sheltered if there was ever a Russian attack on Seattle, because Seattle being the home of Boeing Aircraft Company, as well as a large number of shipyards, and then over across the water in Bremerton was the Bremerton Navy Base. So that would make the Northwest part very vulnerable to attack by ICBMs and by big bombers and all kinds of nasty stuff like that. And that's what I was educated with and learned to deal with growing up in Seattle, was this feeling of constant threat from overseas. I knew about the dew line. I knew about the weapons that we had available and the missile bases that were surrounding Seattle that would knock down these nuclear tipped weapons. Didn't make me a whole lot happier, but I wondered, why are they trying to kill us? You know, we have to defend ourselves against them. And then that brings up the notion of do not kill. Do you say do not kill in self-defense? Well, so is this, you know, should there be complete pacifism? Doesn't seem right. You can't kill yourself. So I need to study this even more. It's bringing up way too many questions. And I would like now to open this up and we can have, let's see, we can have a discussion in large group. Yeah, let's start with a large group discussion. And if we get too much going on, then we can break it up into small group discussion. How does that sound to everybody? Oh, by the way, down at the bottom of your of your Zoom screen, there's a reaction button. And the reaction button will give you an option of hand clapping. It actually is sideways. Then there's the yes, correct. Laughing with tears running down your face because you're laughing so hard. Then there's the scared kid. Oh, of course, you got the heart. But how do they do that? I'm not sure. The heart, you can't see it from that side. Anyway, I'm getting a few smiles. Good. I haven't put anybody to sleep yet. Oh, wait, Tyler? He's got his head down. Oh, he's looking at the book. Okay, good, good. So what do you guys think? Go ahead and unmute yourself to talk. That'd be great. Or raise your hand. That would work too. Okay, any comments on what a precept is? Oh, we have a gentleman approaching the camera.
Go ahead.
There's something? Okay. Can you see me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, people. I've never done this before. All right. So in keeping with your question about whether or not it's okay to defend yourself by killing someone who's trying to kill you.
Yep.
I just want to add three or four things to that that bother me also besides that question. And that would be centipedes that have fallen into my sink because it's deep and they can't get out. So that means they've been in the house. Spiders would go along with that. Abortion, early term, woman's right to choose, and that just made me anxious. So I don't know, I can't remember what else I was thinking of. Oh, weeding my garden, pulling up things that we're calling weeds because I need to create food to eat. So I just, is that it? Okay, that's all I have to say.
Okay. That's real good, thank you. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, not me.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got the view in the wrong place. Okay, let's be fair and give it to Tyler for a minute. And then Dave will pick you up.
I was looking at in the Waking Up to What You Know, she kind of goes into some of this discussion. She just has a really interesting point where she says that when deciding on, you know, is this appropriate to kill? Is that appropriate to kill? And so the question is not to find, she says, the question is not to find an authority that approves or disapproves of our decision, but to delve into our deepest intention and then make a decision from there. And I think that that's where I think it's a really interesting, is it's not, you know, what you do by accident or whatever, that's a whole thing. But then if it's a situation where you have time to make a decision, is really look into why you're making the decision, and not so much look for someone to say yes or no. Does the Buddha say yes, it's okay in this instance, but no, it's not okay, or like what term or whatever, but like really look into yourself. And I think that's kind of key to me when I think about this one, this particular precept. If we're looking at actual, if we're looking at a more literal term of actual life and not getting into the more metaphorical stuff that she gets into later.
Right, right. And Tyler, the book that I was referring to earlier, was in fact exactly the one you're talking about. Waking up to what you do. It's got the big sunflower on it, which I think is most ironic that that's what we're, that's the flower of Ukraine at the moment. And this is a very good book, and I would suggest anybody who has any interest in this to pick it up. It's excellent. I've got to do more reading in it for sure. But yeah. Thank you, Tyler. So, Dave, did you want to open up with that, please? And I'll get you next, Mick.
I mean, I was going to say something very much along the lines of what Tyler got into there. And it occurred to me when you were talking about deer hunting in particular, because I spent a fair amount of time in Alabama growing up. Most of my family were deer hunters. And, you know, it was a necessity. It was something that was necessary. Because we had gone in there and taken out all the apex predators. And if we had not gone out hunting these deer, they would overrun everything, degrade the environment, and they would all starve to death because there's just quite frankly not enough food to go around for them. So that was, it was a matter of necessity. It was just something that had to be done. And then, but if you were just to go down the road with your gun, just shooting the heads off of every animal you saw, you would be rightly considered a psychopath. You know, so I think growing up in that kind of environment, you gain a very keen sense of what is sort of appropriate and necessary under the circumstances, what is not, you know, and that I think that is just an example of what Tyler was talking about.
Yeah, that's a good point. And thank you. I didn't know about all the deer down in Alabama. That's interesting. I had that mistaken impression that only the West had deer for some reason, maybe Pennsylvania, but yeah. So let's see, Mick, you had your hand? Yep.
Yeah. I really like this one. This is really interesting to me because I think, you know, a lot of the questions that we're kind of talking about get to this notion of like, what does it mean to follow the precept? And I like that kind of thinking about the precepts kind of point us, I think, towards the mind of Buddha. And one of the things that I wanted to mention, Thich Nhat Hanh wrote something about non-killing, the precept that I thought was really interesting in terms of like, you know, self-defense and stuff. He said, I pulled it up, anyone can practice nonviolence, even army generals. They may, for example, conduct their operations in ways that avoid killing innocent people. To help soldiers move in the nonviolent direction, we have to be in touch with them. If we divide reality into two camps, the violent and nonviolent, and stand in one camp while attacking the other, the world will never have peace. We will always blame and condemn those we feel are responsible for wars and social injustice without recognizing the degree of violence in ourselves. We must work on ourselves and also work with those we condemn if we want to have a real impact. Most important is to become nonviolent so that when a situation presents itself, we will not create more suffering. That was really interesting because I think kind of like what we're all talking about is like there are situations in which you are almost, it's almost natural to respond with some kind of violence. And then like what do you do at that point? And I don't quite know. Thank you.
Yeah, having lived through the Vietnam War years, even though I never was stationed there, it was heartbreaking to see people coming back from that conflict on both sides. You know, not just the service people coming back, but also the refugees that came back after the end of the war. They left to escape the retributions of the North Vietnamese coming down with their different governmental style. Very difficult. Thank you, Mick. Jinryu, you got your hand up? Super.
I was just... I I mean, these precepts have so many different levels. Yeah. And I was thinking about this one and recently read where the whole idea of not killing, the precepts ask us to be compassionate, and they ask us to put ourselves in the other person's shoes, or to see ourselves in the other person. And if you can start doing that, it makes it really hard to kill. I can't explain what's happening in Ukraine. I can't get my head around it. I can't explain the atrocities. I can only think that, you know, people who are capable of doing that and seemingly wanting to do that without care for anything else, there has to be just an extreme disconnect between an individual's mind or spirit and the rest of humanity. And I think what our precepts are about having compassion and keeping that connection healthy and strong. There will always be things that I do unintentionally, accidents, being thoughtless in the moment. But to make an effort, to have an intention about how we want to live, I think that's what we're being asked to do. That's all I have.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that. So I'm not sure whether it was Alice or Betty that came up first. You want Betty to go first? Okay. Go ahead, Betty.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Alice. I was intrigued by your discussion of the absolute and relative truths related to the two sort of lines below the precept. Mm-hmm. But I think I didn't quite, it didn't gel in my head real well. Is the first one, in the realm of the everlasting Dharma, holding no thought of killing is the precept of not killing, is that one the relative and the second one the absolute, or did I get it backwards?
Just backwards.
So yeah, so in the realm of the everlasting, that's the absolute.
I think so.
Okay. So that's sort of the interdependence and.
Yeah. And okay. I, since you bring that up again, I'd like to reemphasize that the chart that I showed is right out of our website for Brightway. And it really goes into a lot more depth than I want to present here tonight.
And I'll check it out. Thank you.
Super. Thank you for the question. Alice.
Hi, guys. So I like how you pointed out that last line there, the life of Buddha increases with life. No life can be cut off. Sounds really confusing. Continue the life of Buddha. Do not kill Buddha.
Right.
This reminds me of this. Sorry, need to reference Netflix here. This show that I watched on Netflix called Alone. I don't know if anyone watched it, but it's basically, they take these group of people, most of them are Americans, and they put them in the north, like north of Canada, like the Arctic, basically. And the competition is they have to stay alive for 100 days and completely fend for themselves and hunt and kill and live off the land, but they have to prepare in the dead of winter in the Arctic. And then if they live for 100 days without tapping out, they win $1 million. Well, the reason why I bring up is because they all have to kill to eat, but they also in living in the Arctic, they realize how hard it is to survive. And I mean, they don't have, I mean, they can only bring like a couple tools with them. They don't have modern civilization. They don't have like, you know, they have knives, but they don't have guns, for instance. And so it makes it really difficult to survive. And that appreciation for their own lives, each and every one of them found it very difficult to kill another animal for their own sustenance. It was really quite amazing to watch, because these are men and women, and they all go, oh, I have to kill this porcupine for food. Poor little porcupine. I'm so sorry, buddy. I'm so sorry. And then they would viciously attack it and gut it and bleed it and, you know, store it and eat it. But what I'm trying to say here is the appreciation for life is a more important aspect of that precept. Not really like seeing it as a commandment of, okay, do not kill. Well, that's pretty, looking at it pretty simplistically. But if you treasure life itself, then that's, there's something there that makes you appreciate, or, you know, the act of killing, so to speak, if that makes sense. So, sorry, it's kind of hard to put to words because it's kind of an emotional thing, but it's an homage to how difficult it is to live and survive. And then appreciating that is the act, is the thought of not killing.
Yeah, that's good. It brought to mind the respect I have for the Native American hunters who, on bringing down an animal, would basically pray over its existence, thanking it for its being there for to give them, you know, livelihood, support, and so forth. I always thought that was a tremendous gift. And I respect them very much for that, because there's a lot of people that don't care, and they don't have that tradition. And I find it very attractive. So let's see. I see you, Paulette, and thank you, Alice, if I didn't thank you before. I see you, Paulette, but I've got one person in the Zen Center. I'll take them next. So. I see. Let me pin. I can't quite. Where is the pin?
Is it Zendo people?
I'm trying to get the Zendo. Yep. Oh, there we go. I see her now.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
I can. Thank you. Okay.
So there's all this talk about hunting, and I even went on a hunting trip back when I was young with my father-in-law, and I always hoped that he would never kill a deer, and he never did when I was there. And it was a horrible thing. But yet, a lot of us go home and eat meat that has been killed and tortured much more. If you shoot a deer, I think it dies pretty quickly. But the meat that we eat, they suffer all their lives, and their killing is terrible. So how do we understand that, being Buddhists? We don't want to hunt, but we'll go home and eat our meat. That's the question. I mean, I've given it up.
I have an answer for that.
For different reasons, but, you know, for a lot of reasons. Yeah, I think it's a difficult thing, because those animals are die horrible deaths.
Yes, and yet I know there are more than one case where people have to eat protein in order to live. And vegetable protein, I explored this once, Francis Moore LePay's book, Diet for a Small Planet, was very popular back in the late 70s, early 80s.
Early 70s.
Okay. My copy is from the middle to late 70s. So anyway, in there someplace. And they pointed out, she pointed out in that book that the South American native people were doing quite well on beans and rice, whole grain beans. And they were able to get all the amino acids they needed for a healthy life through that method. So it's possible to do that and get a decent life out of things. So
it is possible. I mean, they have learned since then. She talked, you had to combine the rice and the beans. You don't have to do that anymore. If you eat just plants all day, you're going to get enough amino acids and they're going to combine. And there's a lot of athletes becoming vegan these days. So, and I've heard her talk actually recently saying that.
Well, have you? Outstanding.
Yeah, she's still very involved. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Very, very good. Paulette, if you would, please.
This is a tough one for me because I've been a vegetarian vegan for about 30 years. And I think it was because I was interested in Buddhism and the idea of, you know, you should not kill and participate in any suffering of any other creature. and, you know, or sentient being. What I've unearthed is kind of like the precept that I'm going to be discussing, which is anger. Because, you know, even if I don't kill another creature, there's still this destructive element, right, in my, you know, existence that I have to still look at. And it doesn't erase that, you know, it just kind of maybe brings it to the surface. But, you know, Jinryo, what she said, I agree with, because, you know, I think the more you become like in touch with who you are, the more you just can't even bear to experience the suffering of any other creature. So, so, you know, to me, it's like, you know, I look at animals and I just see so much beauty. There's no way that I would ever willingly harm them. And so I take this one very much to heart. And so this is an interesting topic for me, but I think it's connected, like I said, to the anger, because I mean, you know, I'm teaching eighth graders right now. We're reading the Diary of Anne Frank, and she said that wars happen because of the destructive nature in man. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, because there is a destructiveness within us that even if you stop eating meat or contributing to suffering of other beings, you still have to grapple with that. So thanks, Bob.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Paulette. Oh, Nick.
I think we'll bounce to the Zendo first. I think someone in the Zendo will say.
Okay.
Thanks, Nick. Yeah, this is Vikas. I had a thought about killing as sort of a sense of separateness. So killing being to cut oneself off from the world is in a sense a kind of killing, right? When you, let's say, you know, we can kind of zoom at the kind of the absolute or the most inner self, right? And you, inner sense, and say, there is a sense of self, of me, and then there are these things called my emotions, and I'm gonna cut myself off from these things, like my thoughts, like I'm gonna cut my thoughts off. I'm gonna repress or I'm gonna cut off these emotions. And in a sense, when you engage in that, you're engaging in a separateness, like you're separate from what is reality, or, you know, you're in a kind of delusion in a sense by doing that, right? And it's kind of interesting because that you know, multiplied by an entire population of people or over the course of, you know, an entire political cycle is what leads to war. It leads to like that external violence, because in order to do that, you need to have a sense of separateness from somebody else to commit an act of killing in the first place. And I think that's where, you know, we've had like these interesting kind of discussions about what's the difference, let's say, of like unnecessary killing animals for sport versus unnecessary, or like maybe a necessary killing an animal to contain the population of a species so it doesn't eat your own food, you know, versus putting an animal out of its misery, versus, you know, something else that's just like totally unnecessary. And part of that, and you spoke about like Native American cultures, or Alice, you spoke about, you know, killing animals to eat for survival and like appreciating that. I think the context is like really key, because in one hand, you're creating a sense of separateness, like you've sort of killed a part of yourself. You've separated yourself out from the world, whereas the other is you've sort of integrated that, right? And I kind of see this with like, even as people talk about the war in Ukraine, like zooming out with like, you know, there's two sides to this, and you've sort of already created a sense of separateness as like, this is the Ukraine, this is the West, and that's separate from Russia. We've already created the sense of the other, right? We've like separated that out. And you could say whatever you want about, you know, the political governments and like the ones controlling the military, but there's going to be a lot of other people in Russia who are going to suffer as a result of this too, right? And it's easy to separate from that, you know, like, and I think that's, you know, that's kind of what, you know, also leads to war, and what happened in World War III and all the wars is we created a sense of separateness, you know, with the other, right? And I think that's kind of like the absolute and the relative, but, you know, that's the kind of sense that I got.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, Mick.
Vikas, that was like almost exactly where I was thinking about going with this, because in Dogen's commentary, the Dogen, he says, the life of Buddha increases with life. No life can be cut off. And what I'm really curious about, and I don't know if anybody wants to like brave an answer, when he says no life can be cut off, is he commanding me not to cut life off? Or is he telling me that it's not possible to cut life off? Like, is he stating a fact, or is he telling me not to do something? I really enjoy the ambiguity, and I don't know if there's an answer there or not.
You know, Mick, I noticed that too. I wasn't going to bring that up because it felt like I was digging too deep into it for this, you know, short little discussion. I could see a 5 or 6 unit presentation where it'd be 5 or 6 weeks on just this one precept to talk about, you know, what does kill mean in this context? It, going back to the Pali and reading the actual wording from the ancients. What is everlasting Dharma? Is there Dharma that's not everlasting? It creates a dichotomy to give it that name. And, you know, the thought of killing. So that means, you know, if you have it in your heart, just the thought of, oh, I don't want to kill. Well, wait a minute. You know, what are we doing here? There's so much. What life of Buddha can there be that increases with life? Life generating more? So yes, there's a whole lot of stuff going on here. And I'm sure that if we look into all the precepts, we'd be here for, you know, months. Excuse me. So anyway, I need to get to a control, and Zoom is not letting me get to that control. There we go. Okay, I'm back. All right. Let me see. Sabrina, I see you got your hand up.
And I did. I'm wondering if Domio is the one who's about to speak, if my question is actually going to be covered. So maybe let them go first.
Okay, Domio.
Yeah. So just my sense is that the first couplet after the precept, which is from Bodhidharma, is, I mean, I don't know that I would really split up Bodhidharma and Dogen, because Dogen's the second sentence. I don't know that I'd really split it up necessarily absolute and relative. I'm not sure. I'll have to think about that. But I think of it as like the first sentence, holding no thought of killing, that is the realm in which it's impossible to keep the precepts perfectly. Just because, like, as people were saying, if we're talking about cutting off, the moment you have the thought of cutting something off, of othering, whatever, you've broken this precept. So in a way, it almost feels like that points toward the relative, the world in which we're so interdependent, and yet we have this destructive nature in us, and we try, we do our best, but it's impossible to keep. And then I feel like the Dogen part is more of the, I believe it's no life can possibly be cut off. We only think we're cutting off. Like, in a way, if everything just is, if it includes everything, the preciousness of reality, the independent dimension, then it includes war and death and killing and deer overpopulation. It includes all of it. So it's kind of a delusion that we think we're getting away with something by killing, when we've really just kind of moved things around on the chessboard. So anyway, I thought I'd just pop in there on that part.
Oh, so is that. So we've got 2 minutes. I'm having to switch over to gallery view so I can see if there's another hand up someplace. So I'm looking for the dedication. Where did I put it? I think we're.
I don't. I should be sharing that with the class leaders so they can say it. But I don't think I have it posted anywhere. So no, you want me to?
Go ahead.
Okay. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you. Thank you, Bob.